We're listening to the opening of Beethoven's Leonore 3. He wrote one opera and four overtures to it, but this is the one that will begin the next concert of the Huntsville Symphony Orchestra this Saturday evening at 7:30 at the Mark C. Smith Concert Hall. Gregory Voida has made it back to the studios. Welcome back and Happy New Year.
Thank you. Thanks for having me again. Happy New Year.
Yeah, I imagine you have not been slacking off over the holidays.
No, not really. And also, I was here for New Year's Eve. We had a fun.
Sold out concert
uh-huh. at the VBC. So I was here and then back in Europe and then now I'm back here again.
And now we're back beginning and ending with Beethoven 4. Very interesting program, I think. It's called Beethoven 8 and the Stars of the Huntsville Symphony Orchestra. I've got one here and I had the great pleasure of meeting Julia Dina yesterday. She's lovely.
Yeah, Julia is our new concert master She's actually going to be playing a solo part as well because this program, as part of the bicentennial celebration, is featuring soloists from the orchestra. So actually the piece we just heard has a trumpet solo in it mm-hmm. towards the end. That is kind of a solo thing, you know, for a trumpet player. And then we have the Schumann Concerto concert piece for four horns and orchestra, which in itself is a crazy undertaking.
So is John Adams, and so is the Beethoven 8 too. Just kind of a crazy program, but I mean that in a very complimentary way.
Oh, thank you. A good crazy.
Yes. Well, with this piece that we were just listening to, I mentioned Beethoven's one opera, Fidelio, and he couldn't settle on the overture. He kept tinkering with the overtures, and this one was rejected because it was just like too big and powerful and overpowering, maybe.
And even the title, I mean, Leonore was supposed to be the title of
the opera, but there was
it changed to Fidelio. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and we look at these overtures as, you know, just concert pieces now. I mean, they're long. This is like 15 minutes.
Yeah, uh-huh.
And they actually stand as a piece. And actually, all of these overtures are, interestingly, about the same form. So there's a slow introduction that you heard, and then there is a virtuoso middle section, and then, of course, there is the, the moment when Fidelio is being freed from the prison. So that's when the trumpet mm-hmm. comes. And so every and each of these overtures kind of follow the same path.
Right. And they thought maybe it was just too big to, it wasn't like a sampling before, like a typical overture before a musical production. It kind of gives you a hint or an opera, a hint of what's coming up. This kind of tells the whole story. And it said that Beethoven realized, this isn't going to work. But he loved the piece so much that it stuck around.
Well, it's great music in it, of course, as everything that Beethoven left behind, pretty much. I mean, he made a lot of sketches. And you can look at these overtures as well as kind of like, you know, getting to the solution that finally ended up as the overture to the actual opera. And he's been writing his opera for a long time as well.
Mm-hmm. And that was the only one he completed, Fidelio. There was another production called Leonora, so that's why he got talked out of the title. But he was in love with the title of Leonora and kept calling his babies Leonora, his various overtures. I read one music critic said that this overture is the same as having a strong actor miscast for his role.
That's nice. I like that. Yeah, Beethoven was a strong actor.
Yes,
anyway.
You could say that. Yeah.
And you could say that he was miscast for an opera, too, because it was not really his genre,
I think.
Because it was more the symphonies, and that's what we know him for. And Fidelio is a great opera, but mm-hmm. it's a problematic one as far as staging goes. And so he did not have the same talent for opera as you know, some of his contemporaries and definitely Italian composers.
Oh, absolutely.
But he wanted to write an opera and there's just gorgeous, gorgeous music in it.
Thank you.
You can hear the lovely and powerful Leonora Overture No. 3 as it opens this Saturday's concert at 7:30 at the Mark C. Smith Concert Hall. Huntsville Symphony Orchestra back in action with music of Beethoven. And this piece is performed a lot. We can't say that about the Schumann.
Not really, although considering how crazy it is. I'm calling this piece crazy for the second time now. Just think about the orchestration. It's four French horns as solo instruments, and it's about 20 minutes long, 18, 20 minutes, accompanied by an orchestra. And it's the usual concerto format that Schumann liked so much, like in the cello concerto is the same way, and then you go from the first movement to the second without stopping, and from the second to the third. So it's like, that's why it's called a concert piece, mm-hmm. and not a concerto, because they're not separate movements, rather three movements in one. And it really is just showing everything that the French horns can do, and to this day it is a great and big challenge, a mountain that you want to climb if you're a French horn player.
We were just talking off the air with Dori Nutt, who played horn with the symphony for a long time. I asked her if she had ever done it. She was like, well, yeah, something really challenging. So when do the horn players even get a chance to breathe? I mean, it's such a difficult piece.
It is a difficult piece, and especially the range. We're probably going to hear some of it in the third movement, is that it really goes up a third higher than the horns usually play in the first horn. So to actually play this piece, you just need either really, really great and talented first horn player, or someone who does not know fear, because you would really just go up there and it really is like being on the Mount Everest.
Picturing Dori Nutt sitting in the audience at the Huntsville Symphony playing air horn along with this.
I can play it on an air horn too, but even I'm a clarinet player, and even for a clarinet this would be, you know, challenging, mm-hmm. As far as, you know, all these passages go, and then imagine just four French horns.
And when it was written, it wasn't he. Was experimenting, Schumann was, with this crazy new horn with valves. That was a new thing. When we see a French horn, we picture the valves that they press to alter the sound. But when he originally wrote this, it was written for two valveless horns, which would make it even more impossible to play.
Yeah, and since French horns developed a lot, you know, most horn players now play in something called a triple horn, where it's actually three horns built into one. Mm-hmm. So it is easier to play fast and easier to play chromatic stuff and to play these passages that Schumann wrote. But yeah, I'm not sure I want to imagine what it sounded like back then in Schumann's time.
Probably not as good as it's going to sound Saturday night with the Huntsville Symphony Orchestra.
Oh, I can't wait.
You've had one rehearsal already.
Yes, I had a rehearsal with the four horn players, and, you know, I can tell you.
Nobody died?
No, well, no, and I survived too, so
okay.
That was good. But you were up for a treat. I mean, this is really a piece that you don't hear often, and once somebody finally decides to program it and you find the right horn players, then it really is just a treat.
We have another treat, the Alabama premiere of this piece by John Adams.
Absolute jest. That's the title of it.
That's it. Yes, he's not kidding. It really is called Absolute Jest. And I found it on YouTube, and you might not want to look at the comments if you look it up on YouTube.
You know, I never look at the comments on the internet because, you know, making comments faceless is kind of the thing nowadays, and, mm-hmm. and you don't have to take responsibility for what you're saying. But I'm happy to argue with anybody over really anything if it's about classical music. This piece, I believe, is just a perfect pair to go with the Beethoven Symphony Number 8.
Yeah, right? We'll talk about that in a little bit.
And it's just the idea of using a string quartet as a solo ensemble with an orchestra in the background. Adam says that he got this idea from Stravinsky, mm-hmm. from Pulcinella, that we actually played a couple of years ago, which really is using that piece, uses a string quartet as a little concertante group, so there's this conversation going on between the smaller group and the bigger group. And so he actually wanted to do something what Stravinsky did in Pulcinella, where Stravinsky used Pergolesi's music and turned into his own. And Adams here is paying homage to Beethoven, actually, the late mm-hmm. Beethoven quartets, the string quartets.
And you hear some symphonies in there, too. And
oh, yes.
It's fun.
Yeah.
I found it fun to listen to.
Yeah. Don't read the comments.
I did. I'll tell you. We'll listen to a little bit of it, and then I'll tell you the one that stuck out in my mind. Absolute Jest by John Adams. Mark Sweat, who's the music critic for the LA Times, said about this piece, "It's like a video game driving fast through ever-changing, ever-unexpected landscapes with sudden turns and all manner of passing scenery, but you always know the country is Beethoven land."
It is Beethoven land, and you just heard that little timpani interruption there. Because with Beethoven, you know, of course, he recycled his old ideas and mm-hmm. and wrote them in different ways. And the material that you can find in the late string quartets, you can also find in symphonies and vice versa. So Adams is playing with this idea. And also, I think I like this analogy with video games because it kind of starts like some movie music, mm-hmm, you know, mm-hmm. some thriller soundtrack, and then it turns into this just tour de force, really crazy, fast and difficult, especially for the string quartet, just this run that we actually know Adams for. You know, he has many pieces like that with a lot of energy and very
speed. Oh, yeah, think Short Ride in a Fast Machine.
Yes, exactly. And so the end of this piece is actually very virtuoso for both for the string quartet and for the orchestra.
Well, when I was speaking with Julia, did she tell you that she's actually performed this piece with John Adams?
I didn't know about that. She did not tell me, but my spies, you know, reported that. But she played in the orchestra when yeah. she did that with Adams. But it's funny, and actually, I think it's great to, you know, kind of graduate into the solo part from the orchestra, uh-huh. and actually the idea that you get to do this or did this with the composer is a great thing.
Now, if you go to the symphony regularly, like if there's a cellist or a violinist who's your guest soloist, they're out front doing their thing with the orchestra behind him. How is it going to look with this Absolute Jest with the string quartet? How is the stage set up?
Same idea. So for the Schumann, the four French horns are going to be in a soloist position, and so will the string quartet. Mm-hmm. So in front of the orchestra, and I'm going to come downstage so they can actually see me and see each other, which is very important for chamber music playing. And so the orchestra can see me as well, but both groups are going to be in a soloist position.
Yeah, there's this conversation going on between the orchestra and the string quartet. Now, will your musicians be mic'd? I understand that's what they do when they do this performance.
The score calls for lightly amplified string quartet. And the reason for that is just the balance between mm-hmm. the orchestra and the string quartet. Because unlike in Stravinsky's Pulcinella, this is a big orchestra. So actually have a full orchestra behind the string quartet. And string quartets are not French horns, you know. They gotta stand a chance to be heard. And I think it's a nice idea to kind of have this slightly elevated sound, you know, mm-hmm. With this smaller group as a concertante group and just to have the mass of the sound of the orchestra behind them.
We're listening to the first couple of minutes of Absolute Jest by John Adams. And it's interesting, you can hear the Beethoven, and it kind of goes off the tracks, kind of like a rickety roller coaster. But that's not the quote that stuck in my head that I read in the YouTube comments. It said, and forgive me, it said it sounded like somebody put Beethoven in a broken washing machine.
You know, I read comments like, oh, I never heard of this Beethoven guy. He's talented. So, you know, I think that tells you everything about the mixed crowd that you know, post comments on under YouTube videos. Yeah, and what's wrong with Beethoven in a washing machine anyway? I think it's fun.
Yeah, it is. It is, and the whole concert is going to be fun. And it wraps up with more Beethoven, which is a very fun Eighth Symphony. Eight doesn't get a whole lot of love.
It should.
Yes, the first time, in fact, the only time I heard it live was the New York Philharmonic, and it was the first half of the program that included 8 and 9.
Oh my!
Yeah.
although I can see why it works. It's always good to have something lighter before you do 9. But yes, 8 is stuck in between the two big brothers, right?
Seven and nine. Yeah.
And it's not easy to be the middle child in this case. It belongs to the so-called lighter symphonies, like 1-4. 1-4-8, 1-2-4-8 are considered the so-called, you know, happier ones. Mm-hmm. And here, you know, Beethoven was writing this parallel with 7 at one time. So it's interesting how on one desk you have symphony number 7 and on another desk you have symphony number 8. But that also tells you how a composer's brain, you know, works, is that it's not all one thing. There's so many things in someone's head who is creative, and you need to take a break, right? So Symphony number 8 is Beethoven taking a break from 7 and from 9, because you know he was writing these symphonies over decades, not mm-hmm. you know, this first catch of an idea for Beethoven 9 was actually 20 years before he actually started writing the first note of it. So and if you have these ideas, and Beethoven has a lot of light-hearted and just playful music, mm-hmm. especially from the early years. So Symphony number 8 is somehow belongs to this, you know, younger, happier Beethoven, even if it was written towards the end of his life.
Right, and he wasn't really in a happy place mentally, but it doesn't matter. We still get to hear this piece. I was described in The Guardian as one of the shortest, weirdest, but most compelling symphonies of the 19th century.
It's true, and it's barely longer than the Schumann concert piece, actually, mm-hmm. which is, you know, it's considered a short piece. And here you have a full symphony, which is not much longer than that. So there you can kind of get an idea of the scope of it and how it is shorter and lighter and more lighthearted. And it's just, it has a lot of what we just heard in the Adams. That's mm-hmm. that's why actually I'm excited about doing these two pieces on the same program, because there are always these twists and turns, and there is this riding along, like kind of speed, always
yeah.
speed.
Very merry Beethoven here, his 8th symphony. You can hear it in its entirety coming up Saturday evening at 7:30 at the Mark C. Smith Concert Hall. Gregory Voida conducts the stars of the Huntsville Symphony Orchestra, the French horn players, the string quartet, and all the magnificent musicians that have gathered in Huntsville.
I wanted to start the bicentennial celebration by celebrating the musicians of the ages, so because you know, they're always there, they always play great music for you, and they deserve to be featured as soloists, you know. Sometimes there are pieces when, you know, you're the second horn player and you're just sitting there and playing bah, bah, bah. There's not much in it to, you know, no moments to shine. But in other pieces, and not only if you're playing a solo part, there are things that are really not appreciated, because you're kind of like sitting in the middle of a crowd, you know, and everybody's busy and everybody's working. And then the audience can only hear you if you make a mistake, because it's like, oh, my God, something was missing, or I was the wrong note. But you need to appreciate, you know, the knowledge and the artistry of all the musicians of the Huntsville Symphony to be able to appreciate the symphony itself. And I really wanted to just feature our players for this concert and with this great program that we're doing. Thank you.
I'm glad no one's ever asked me what my favorite Beethoven symphony is, because I can't. Every time
What's your favorite Beethoven symphony?
Right now it's this one. Eight. Today, at this moment, it's eight. I like what Sir George Grove said about this piece. He says, this finale that we're listening to is the great movement of the symphony. It's pure Beethoven in its most individual and characteristic vein, full of those surprises and unexpected effects, those mixtures of tragedy and comedy, not to say farce, which makes his music so true a mirror of human life, equal in his brand for the art to the great plays of Shakespeare and his, and for the same reason.
Nice.
Yes.
Very nice.
Thank you, Sir George. Lovely, lighthearted finale of Beethoven's Eighth Symphony. You can hear it live beginning at 7:30 at the Mark C. Smith Concert Hall, the Huntsville Symphony Orchestra performing. If you can't wait for Saturday night, you can come in on Saturday morning beginning at 11. There's a sneak preview. It's the final classical rehearsal, which is open to the public. You can see the artist in a working setting. That's perfect for families, seniors, and kids. If your kids get wiggly, they can get up and walk around, and you can actually see how the maestro works with the orchestra.
And the maestro gets wiggly on stage.
And that is at 11 o'clock. And then the Music Explorers Club is that same morning at 10:15, and kids can come and explore the orchestra. That's coming up this Saturday, but there's something else on Sunday, isn't there?
Well, not this Sunday, but the next, okay. On the 27th, we have our second Casual Classics concert. If you've ever been to one, then you know that we're not only playing music that doesn't necessarily fit this big concert hall we have here, but also we're going to exciting venues. This time it's going to be at a coffee shop at Low Mill, and we're playing the Coffee Cantata by Johann Sebastian Bach, and also the second suite, which is for flute and strings, with the famous Baudinary movement in it. And I'm going to talk a little bit about Bach and especially this very strange piece, the Coffee Cantata. You know, he only has a handful of non-religious cantatas, and this is one of them. And
well, coffee is a religious experience to some of us.
Well, in the morning for me, it sure is a religious experience, but it's interesting to me how this great composer actually wrote such great music to celebrate something that, you know, we just go into a coffee shop and enjoy it, and it's a mundane thing in a way now, especially nowadays, but it inspired Bach, and he wrote this Coffee Cantata.
And again, in the nice, warm environment of Low Mill's Casual Classics, you don't have to put on your sparkly earrings and your high heels. You can just come on down to Low Mill and enjoy a cup of coffee and music.
Exactly.
Which is how a lot of people enjoyed it in Bach's time. That's what people did. They didn't stare at their screens all day. They went to the coffee shops and heard the music live.
And so, you know, Low Mill, we did a yoga concert there last year. So I think it's a great venue to do very different things, actually. A couple of years ago, we played at the Flying Monkey Theater.
That was
so
fun.
You have a theater setting as well.
Uh-huh.
And then we could use the space where you have the pictures hanging and the sculptures. And then now we're going to use this this little coffee lounge. And I'm just looking forward to it because I'm a coffee person also. Mm-hmm. But also because, you know, you also don't get to do this this Bach cantata very often, because you need the right venue and you need to find the occasion.
And you get to get close with the musicians. I was talking to Julia off the air about how wonderful and kind the musicians of the orchestra are. If you just go to the concerts and sit in the concert hall in the dark and appreciate the music, I don't really think you get the full picture of these human beings.
Absolutely. It's, you know, use the opportunity to get to know our musicians, because they're really wonderful people.
And many of them live right here in the Tennessee Valley and teach music to our kids and are genuinely concerned. So you should come and support them. Come here at the Huntsville Symphony Orchestra live on a Saturday evening at 7:30. It's Beethoven 8. And the stars of the Huntsville Symphony, are they wearing stars? Or they just know that they're stars.
No, we are the stars. Right. That's it.
If you need more information, the number to call is 256-539-4818. That website is hso.org. Gregory Voigt, it's always a pleasure.
Thanks.